This is the Relevant Podcast.
It's episode 1110, and it's a Relevant Podcast here in Orlando. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and joining me from Loverland, Virginia, it's Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Nashville, Tennessee, artist, producer, mogul, Derek Miner.
What up, though?
Just down the road there, our managing editor, downtown, Emily Brown.
Hey, y'all.
Hey, and Marty is on an airplane right now, so he's not going to be joining us on today's show. So
he can use the Wi-Fi.
All right.
I don't think we want to hear that.
What's the excuse? I want to see what people around him would, if he's just talking full volume on a podcast, on an airplane,
That actually would be pretty interesting. Like, do you want some pretzels?
there's enough, I feel like for a while there was a lot of gimmick podcasts. I feel like that's tacked back a little. Thanks, you know what I mean? But it's
what
it's,
do you mean? Yeah.
It would be Smartless is an example of gimmick podcast. It's three hosts and one of them brings a guest but doesn't tell the other host who the guest is, so they have to prepare. Or it was Pete Holmes, back in the day, it was you made it weird. And it was all right, tell me how so-and-so, you make it weird. You know what I mean? There was always some little gimmick or it's this is us in the back of a tour van or whatever, right?
Right.
There was never an airplane pod, where I feel like AirPod. That's a great name for a podcast. And it's people conducting interviews to who they're sitting next to on an airplane. Why hasn't that happened?
It'd be a great way to fall asleep because of all the white noise that would be just baked into it.
Right. Exactly.
Well, what I'm saying is imagine a podcast where you take a cross-country flight and you're like, all right, I'm going to interview for the entirety of the flight the person I randomly get assigned next
to. That would be my AirPod. My literal hell.
You're welcome.
Sitting next to that podcaster.
iHeartRadio, whoever. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Golly. You just sit
that
down in your seat.
As bad as the guy that's turning people in for the carts, right?
Yeah.
Cameron, you would
put the light on and request, I have got to be moved to a different seat. You need to.
Yeah, ma'am. I'm sorry. This person with the microphone and headphones is, I think they're plotting to interview me. I need to move.
I am planning on interview you, but first I want to tell you about BarkBox. BarkBox, ladies and gentlemen. Use offer code AirPod1. 15% off. Anyway, so where are you headed today? Guess you're the same place I am. All right.
Yeah, we're going to the same city, obviously.
Why are you going there? That's what I always want to know when I'm on planes is because I'll take them a lot of times at night on weekend or on weeknights because I'm just cheap and that's when they're cheapest.
Heck yeah. 5 a.m.
There's
Let's
a part
go.
Of me you that's heard? Like, okay, I know why I'm flying to Houston at 8 p.m. on a Wednesday night. Why are you flying to Houston at 8 p.m. on a Wednesday night? What's going on here? I'll give you that for AirPod. That's what I want to know.
Well, my sister just had a miscarriage.
Cameron.
Scratch. Delete. Delete.
It's like, you can't. I don't want to know why you're traveling to Houston on a Wednesday
night. I get it. He picked the most extreme thing he could think.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Sorry. I was just looking for some friendly banter. Sorry.
I won the lottery and I'm going to collect my winnings. All right. Let's talk.
Can I get 20 bucks? Yeah.
Most people, Emily, to your point, most people are traveling to do something interesting, whether that's pleasant or unpleasant. They're usually taking the time to board a plane, spend all this money because they're doing something somewhat interesting. No one just
like Marty. He's flying back from Nashville to LA right now because he was just performing at the Dove Awards and he had a showcase and he didn't win any awards and just the whole thing. It would have been a great conversation.
That's what I'm saying. If you're the host of AirPod, that's the kind of person you're dying to get seated next to.
This is fact.
This is a great idea. I'm actually going to pitch this to an airline.
to an airline presented by Delta. Mm-hmm. Come fly Delta where you will be hounded by somebody trying to talk to you for the entire flight.
Just give me my 5%, bro. Just give me my 5%.
For what, Derek? You didn't do anything.
I came up with the idea.
He's part of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. Wait, we need to run this back. I think Jesse came up with the
idea. Run it back. I said he could do the podcast on the plane.
On the plane. That's right.
Okay.
And he said, yes.
Wait, yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay.
Emily, this is how musicians do writing sessions. So you're there. It's like a big pot of stew. You're all part of it. And at the end of it, Derek will divvy up credit. Here's 12% to you, 8% to you. Here's your 5.
So I didn't build it out, so I just want my 5, for originating the idea. I just want 5.
Can I get 5 for supporting it?
Hey, but it's like that in the writing rooms a lot.
I've heard this about Derek too, that Derek is very fair with the credit percentages and stuff. So it's like him asking for five, he's doing Jesse a solid, saying I'll just take my five, even though I was originating the entire concept. But you know,
hey, I just look. He built it out. He go do the work. He go you look. Idea is an idea, but you still gotta build it out. That's why I'm like, I don't want to build it out. I just want five for just saying, listen, hey, let's do this.
There's more than enough BarkBox money to go around. Okay? We'll all get our piece. All right. So just, you know, producer of the world, let us know. Speaking of songwriting credits, real quick transition.
Oh, nice.
You know, Drake released his new album, and it was big news everywhere, but it was particularly...
First track, Virginia Beach.
First track, Written Virginia about Beach. You. There were like, it led local news, and like, there was a story in the paper about it. Even though, like...
Oh, it's lit.
Hometown pride, man.
Hometown pride, because everyone thought like it was like, because he released the track list like a couple days before the album came out. So, but and everyone was like, oh my gosh, Virginia Beach, the city where I live, is the name of the first. Everyone thought it was going to be like a diss track because he's feuded with, you know,
Pharrell and Clips
and all the people from here. But really, it's only one line, and it was sort of it was worse than a diss track, because at least with a diss track, it's like, you know, like,
yeah, we're in your head enough that you're putting a whole track together.
We're rent free. Our humble town is rent free in Drake's head. Instead, it was just like, it was pretty but ghetto, pretty but rough, like Virginia Beach. And it was like, well, that's even worse, man. You know, why do you have to couch it? Pretty but what does that even mean? What do you insinuate?
Well, you
know
what I mean? You have a beach.
Virginia Beach is very pretty but ghetto, bro. Like, yeah, it is like that, bro.
Like I said, that is a slap in the face.
Jesse, pretty but rough. On your beachfront, are stores that predominantly sell like only velvet shorty end. Shorts with the Chick-fil-A logo on the butt, but it says Thick Filet.
That's only so on the you south tell me, end of no the way. Beach.
You tell me the town that sells Thick Filet merch is
hey,
not.
I need some of them for my wife. Hey, look, hey, we gonna get them for Amethia, baby. I need the Thick Filet shorts, baby.
Derek, the building I'm sitting in right now is literally physically connected to a shop that sells those.
Hey, Thick Filet merch.
Jesse, buy me some, bro. Dude, just sit them my
Jesse
way.
Jesse walking in on his lunch hour buying Thick Filet shorty
they
shorts.
They wouldn't even think twice. They wouldn't even. They'd be like, hey. Yeah.
Me and wifey headed out of town next week. I forgot to tell y'all this. We going out of town. We going out the country. So just, need the Thick Filet shorts.
All right. Derek, the country if you would really like some if you would really oh, like sorry. Some I could buy you that and that's the least of the most that's the least of the provocative oh. apparel
yeah, that's the one I could me. Say and still keep our clean rating, you know,
it's some very provocative
listen
apparel.
This is like me and Cohen road trip up there in the summers, you know, and we were up there and we had you know, Jesse's kids with us and stuff, and I was like, I got to get a funny shirt. I got the Virginia's for Lovers shirt last summer. I want to keep adding to my Virginia you know, ironic merchandise.
Did you get a Thick
and
Filet
so Jesse's
shirt?
Like, let me take, yeah, we can go to a shop. And I, you know, he took me to a t-shirt shop and I was just like, it was all boring. It was like distressed Virginia Beach, you know, looking like a college logo. No, just stupid stuff. I was like, I need something funny. He's like, well, we got to go down to the south part of the beach for that stuff. Jesse didn't even park. He just like let us out.
Yeah,
so
I'm
it's
not
me
parking down
and
there.
Two down
there. Children, me and two children. Going into these shops where they're selling a ton of weed paraphernalia, like Thick Filet merch, and a lot of stuff where those little boys became men. You know what I'm saying? Reading those t-shirts, they're like, what does that mean, Daddy?
But here's the thing. I don't feel like for Drake to label our whole town pretty but rough, pretty but ghetto, just because of one strip of hilarious t-shirt shops. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Federal booty inspector shorts are funny. What do you want?
FBI. Anyway,
I like it.
Congrats on your town shout out, man. I mean,
like I said, it was literally news here. I mean, it was in the paper.
Maybe it'll boost tourism. You never know.
I think they're
not struggling for tourism. They're good.
but the thing is, like, he could have said anything. Like I said, that is like a passive aggressive. It was like that episode of Always Sunny where Max tells Dennis that he never compliments him, and he's like, can you say one nice thing about me? And Dennis's compliment was, your hair looks very small. Okay, there, I said something. It's like that. It's like
Drake. That's Drake to Virginia.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why are you, you know, why you got to keep us up at night? Now you're rent free in our heads. But anyway,
I kind of really can relate to that because a couple years ago, Drake put out a song called TSU, which I think was Texas State University, but like it was, but he listed a bunch of cities in Texas and it was really weird the ones he listed because he said like Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, but he also said like Marshall and Prairie View and like Wharton County, which are not big cities at all.
Nah, Prairie View though, that's what a hood at. PVU. That's the HBCU in there.
But it just was so funny to hear like Drake, this like one of the biggest rappers, Canadian, might as well, just like talk about these random Texas cities because it was like, why are you talking about it? Like, this is our place. What are you going to say about it? Like, I was a little nervous. He didn't call us Pretty or Baghetto, but.
What do y'all think about the new album, his new album? I mean, it's doing well numbers-wise, but I'm noticing that some people love it and some people really hate it.
I think he's at the place where he's going to need to, well, he doesn't need to do anything because he's going to make so much money, but to keep the hip-hop respect, if that even matters to him, I think he's going to have to diversify his content a little bit. In a sense, the hard thing for, I think, Drake, I think Kanye has the same problem as well, is they have changed music so many times that you just expect them to do it every time. Mm. And I think that's the problem. Like, he's making great albums. Like, Drake is doing what Drake has been doing for the past 5 years, but that's the problem. That people want Drake to change music again.
Yeah, but his last album was like more house, and then obviously he's had his, you know, Afro beats and Caribbean albums, and he's, you know, right. Even on this album, when he had that Bad Bunny track, he starts talking with a Spanish accent. I'm like, Drake, you are not Spanish. You are not Jamaican. You are not like, he leans so hard into that scene, that vibe, that he kind of personifies it, but it almost feels derivative. But I'm with you. I like it. I like it. I've listened to it quite a bit. It's one of those that you just, it's background music. But like, to me, he could have cut out 5 or 6 tracks and it would have been stronger. You know, less is more, buddy. Come on.
Yeah, I think, he's at that place. He's at the, to me, he's at the LeBron James place of his career where it's like, it's not good enough for you to drop 30, 10, and 10 every night. You got to bring a championship home every night or people are going to, they're not going to be happy because you've just spoiled them too much with great music. Like, that's really the issue.
I kind of feel that way. Like, I'm definitely more of a fan of Drake's older stuff. And I would say really the last 5 years, it's been fine. Like, I get why people still listen to it. But if I listen to Drake, I'm going back farther because it's like, because I don't love the style he's in right now. And so, but he kind of keeps staying with it to an extent. And I'm like, okay, well, he'll do something new eventually. I know, like, just because he kind of has done that for a long time in his career.
He has a gap coming up. Did you hear what he said? He's just finished his world tour. Something? Yeah, he's like, he's going to take a year plus, a minimum of a year off of music, touring, everything for his health, mental health, physical health. Mm-hmm. He's like, I just got to go and shut out. That's going to be... When he comes back from that,
it's a wrap.
That album is, it's going to be a wrap.
It's a wrap. I didn't know that. It's a wrap. It's a wrap.
Yeah, there is.
He's like just exhausted. He's spread too thin. He's just like,
I mean, he's been going for years. Like,
right. Yeah. That's the thing. And I think the music is reflecting that. Yeah. It's like, you got to think of an album, how you put an album together. You can't have hit. You got to have ballads. You got to make it breathe. His career is kind of like that. He's put out so many albums. They're just kind of like blended into each other. We don't remember one from the other. If creating a gap will create, it's the Star Wars situation. Mm-hmm. When Disney bought Star Wars, it was like too much Star Wars product came out. There was like 3 movies in 1 year at one point. And instead of it being an event when a Star Wars thing came out, it just, numbers started to drop, got diluted. I feel like Drake's kind of diluted himself with volume. I love the vibe, but I'm excited to see what happens on the other side of him getting rest, you know?
Yeah. There's like that creative risk aversion that kind of comes in where it's just, you kind of repeat what works to the point where it's like, all right, let's hear something fresh. So yeah, I think, usually time away for any artist results in some fresh inspiration.
Or culture moves on, forget about you. Drake, nah, I don't think that happened with Drake.
Culture ain't gonna forget about Drake.
Yeah, no, I know.
He's a staple. That's like saying culture's going to forget about Michael Jackson. It's like, right. Nah, they waiting.
Did you see he tied MJ for most number ones? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think also a thing that is makes being innovative in this era hard is because people don't look at music as art. It's just content to be consumed, right? Think about it. Me and No Big Deal was talking about this yesterday. That imagine trying to promote Kanye's college dropout in this environment. You wouldn't even get past the skit. Mm-mm. Like, I got 15 seconds to win your approval. Yeah. Like, those early albums, College Dropout, Late Registration, they were literally movies that you had to sit down and you had to consume them. But people, they treat music, especially rap music, as so disposable that it doesn't lead to innovation. It doesn't lead to innovation. So I'm hoping that the album becomes relevant again. That allows artists to just take their time and spread their wings with their art. And then you'll start getting less of the disposable art. I mean, that's my opinion.
Well, because right now, like, you put out an album and what's going to happen is a track will get picked up on playlists or whatever. And then that's people experiencing your new album is that one track that like gets spread or whatever. They're not going to go sit down, listen to the album with intentionality. Like it used to be. Think about Lauryn Hill's album skits throughout it. You know, think about the Fugees. Think about, I mean, it was a thing. I always hated the skit. I hated the skit tracks because on my CD player, you'd have to hit, you know, next, but you know, I get it.
But even like what to the point, like would an album like Kid A work today? Because it's the same thing. Right. If you listen to any of those songs in a vacuum, some of them don't even make sense without the context of not just the narrative of the album or OK Computer or what either of those Radiohead albums.
Early Arcade Fire.
But they bleed. Like, yeah. Because same thing with some of those Kanye albums. A lot of those tracks bleed into each other. They're not like separate songs. They are chapters in kind of a book almost, you know.
They're movies. Audio movies. Like, that's legitimately that. So I think just the idea that you have to win someone's approval in 15 seconds.
Right.
Like, only thing I've really seen from the Drake album on social media is just there's a skit running with Yeet and Drake doing like an ad lib on a Yeet verse. And them making fun of Drake sounding really weird and it's like, that's it. For some people, that's the most experience with the album. You don't get to experience all of the art behind it. So I hope that that we turn in a corner. I think, you know, everything is cyclical. So I think the next generation coming up is going to want something a little bit more deep. They just don't know they want it yet.
Yeah, that's
right. Somebody has to be brave enough in that world to say, you know what, I'm not giving you 15 seconds of content. I'm giving you a whole album. Come get it. And then it'll change everything.
I remember on the last Arcade Fire, you know, they'll write 7-minute songs, you know, I mean, pretty consistently. And that's the point is like, it's supposed to kind of wash over you. You spend time with it. It builds. It's, you know, it's art, right? And I remember when they released their last album, the one single they put out was a 7-minute track, and they had to split it into part one and part two because nobody listens to a 7-minute Arcade Fire song anymore. So they had to do 2 3-minute songs. So one of them could get picked up or put on a playlist or whatever. It's just like, it just changes the art, right? The way people are consuming it changes the art itself. So hopefully, I agree with you. I'm hoping that like this generation will say, I'm tired of disposable. I want something deeper, better. And then they'll go back to, you know, the artistry of music.
So. Go ahead, Emily.
Well, I was going to say, I do think like the next generation is moving towards that. Cause I remember a couple years ago just being like shocked because I stumbled upon like a Twitter thread and it was a lot of younger people that were on like Gen Z. And they were talking about how when a new album comes out, they'll hit shuffle on it, like on Spotify, and they'll just listen to it in a random order. And someone was like coming in being like, you should actually listen to it in the track list order. Like there's a reason artists did that. And I saw that come up again because I'm sure y'all listened to it. Olivia Rodrigo had a new album come out last month. And between her first and second song, like the way that it transitioned is there's like an intentional sort of flow, like the way the song ends flows into the next song. And people, specifically younger like listeners were like freaking out about it, saying that's so cool she did that, that's awesome, like all this stuff. And I was like, that's
a crossfade.
Yeah, I was like, that's a very common thing in songs. But it's like I think there's just something with younger listeners, like they like you said, like they listen to one song in a playlist and they'll just jump to that song on an album, maybe listen to a few others, but they're on shuffle, they don't get like
Or they'll even just look at like the play numbers on the album. Yeah. So they're, oh, okay, there's three tracks on this album that are popular. I'll listen to those three.
And so they miss the flow of the story. And I do think that they're finally realizing like, oh, maybe the artist made this track list intentionally and I should maybe listen to it the whole way through. Right. So I think we're getting there. It's just taking a while. They'll get there.
The irony is, though, the other major form of like media consumption, like television, has gone the opposite way, where it used to be like, you know, especially with like syndication or whatever, you just turn on the TV and there's a random episode of a show. You can just think, I'm going to jump right in here. No one today is like, I'm just going to fire up a random Stranger Things, just right in the middle. And it's like, no one consumes television like that, where it used to be not a big deal. You could turn on the TV and whatever episode.
Well, it depends on the genre. Wow, I mean, like, that's like crazy. That comedy. I mean, The Office you could watch in order. Right. I mean, you know. Whatever.
But there were like for a lot of series, every episode was a bottle episode. You could turn on any NCIS or Law and Order and just enjoy it for what it is. They don't really make shows like that really anymore, you know, outside
and of what's interesting about that is the number one show on streaming
Suits.
By far is Suits, which is bottle episode, exactly what we're talking about. You can just jump in wherever.
I was watching Suits because I never watched it when it was popular,
right?
And I just thought, I was like, oh, Suits, you know, I was like, let me check this out. And I realized, I'm like, there's a resolution at the end of every episode, and it felt almost. It was jarring because watching a show that resolves after every episode feels crazy when you spent years watching shows that don't resolve until the end of the season.
Maybe.
And you're like, you know what I'm saying? Like it feels,
Was off-putting. There might be a cliffhanger. Yeah.
Yeah. It was off-putting. Like, man, why does this thing keep resolving? And that makes sense because it was written during a time when you don't know when you're stepping into the series. So they had to win your... They had to every win week. Your trust every week. Yeah.
And even like the plot lines that maybe go a few longer episodes, those typically are resolved within maybe a handful of episodes. Like it's not like a season long issue or that they're fighting or something.
Yeah, there's not a through line where there's this thing that you're watching them come to a pinnacle. It's like, nah, if there's a bad thing that happened, you might get two episodes out of that. The problem set up in the first one, second episode, it's resolved, and then now we're going to fight another bad guy. What do they call him? Bad guy of the week.
Monster of the week. Yeah, exactly.
Monster of the week.
I mean, I remember like there were some episodes, there were some series that tried to thread that needle, like back in the day, like Scandal, like the height of when that show was doing kind of interesting things. It started off as a procedural.
Seasons after that.
Yeah, but after that, because it moved into like this long story arc over the course of a season about these conspiracies, that it lost the procedural. Like there was no what case are we solving this week, or are we lawyer or fixing or whatever, you know? It's just interesting, especially the juxtaposition in music where everything is a bottle episode. Every song is isolated from a larger narrative, where now all of TV seems tied to these big narratives where you kind of have to start from the beginning, you know?
I mean, it's interesting. Our guest today is Brooke Lidgerwood, who has a new album out today. But it's interesting thinking about the worship genre, too. Like a worship album, you would think would be an intentional experience. But so much of the modern worship scene is like individual songs that we hope to get on the radio or get sung in churches. And they aren't connected to the rest of the album. It's just a whole bunch of songs. It's just a collection of songs, you know. Interesting. Each genre kind of has evolved. Yeah.
For sure.
Anyway, all right. Well, like I said, Brooke is coming up later. We also have your feedback at the end of the show, but stay tuned. Up next, it's Love and Buzz.
So, how did I get so lucky? Hand in hand in second hands. The fool, you look so lovely. Your mind, I'm onto you, and you're never fussy. Love that you love. My App Shop Lover.
You're listening to Grant Perez. The song is App Shop Lover.
Where bold women thrive, Sweetbriar College empowers women to lead with purpose and integrity. Our 2,847-acre campus is more than beautiful. It's a place to grow in courage, character, and calling. With hands-on academics, a close-knit community, and spaces like vineyards, greenhouses, and equestrian arenas, Sweetbriar blends tradition with vision. Founded in 1901, we've always believed in the power of women to shape a better world, faithfully, fearlessly, and together. Find out more at sbc.edu.
Okay, it's time for
Relevant Buzz.
All right, tell us what's happening at the intersection of faith and culture this week, Emily.
Okay, I'm so excited to talk about this. We're going to talk about Lana Del Rey today. Recently, a Christian influencer named Tracy Costin posted this video accusing Lana of using witchcraft her career and like at her show.
Wait, why?
And the video, it's intentional.
It's kind of gnarly for real.
Well, so
you're talking about the video of the people falling?
Yeah, so
it was kind of gnarly.
Yeah,
though.
People are like falling over. I will say it is dark and it's hard to see exactly what's happening. It could easily be dehydration. It could be a mosh pit gone wrong.
Wait, describe what's going on for those who haven't seen it. Like, what's going on?
Okay, so yeah, the video, it's a show that Lana is headlining at. I believe it's in Mexico. And she's just sitting on stage, and then all of a sudden there is...
Night or day?
Is it
outside?
Okay. It's a pretty big crowd, and then all of a sudden there is a moment where there's just a lot of people that kind of fall over, and it's unexplained. And the videos I've seen, like, they don't go on very long, so it's hard to piece together what led to this and what happened exactly after. But you can't...
When you say a lot of people, is it four people in the front row fell over? Is it half the crowd?
No, it's a good chunk. I would say maybe 50 people probably like fell over.
Did she say or do anything to that then this happened?
Well, I haven't found a clip where she acknowledges it, because I do think a lot of people maybe cut quickly, because I was trying to find like different angles and stuff. So that's the hard part, is no one really knows exactly what happened or why. And like, I'm a researcher, I've been trying to figure out what's happening. But this Christian influencer, she came to this conclusion, and she didn't really give a lot of great evidence other than her personal perception, but she thinks that witchcraft was used. And she made this whole video about how Lana is a witch and puts spells on her music so that's why people listen to them.
She goes to Judas Church in LA.
Here's what I've learned about the internet. When someone has minimal evidence, but a wild, unconfirmed theory, it's best just to assume they know what they're talking about, no matter how sensational it is. That never is wrong. That is never wrong.
Like, Jesse and I have been to enough major concerts to know that usually in the crowd, there is a person who brought party favors for all the people around them. And they hand out the party favors, or at least offer the party favors,
like confetti,
to help their newfound friends to better enjoy the music experience. We're talking about a concert in the summer in Mexico, and people are falling over near each other. I'm wondering if there were some party favors being shared. I don't know.
And the other thing, too, is like, okay,
Jerry Blackwater.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is like when people ascribe these, like, supernatural powers to just like average pot. So you're telling me she has the power to just like, you know, somehow have some sort of spell cast and just mow down crowds of people, and the path she's chosen in life is to be a pop singer. If she has this X-Men's supernatural witch power that she can just mow down crowds with like Hadoukens, like Street Fighter style, you're going to be a pop.
She was working at Waffle House for a week this summer. You know what I mean? Like, she's not.
Man, this is what I've realized, bro, a lot of Christians live in a episode or of Lord of the Rings, you know what I mean? Like, just in their mind, anything that's unexplained is just...
Gotta be a witch.
It's the Guggenheim. Like, it can't be dehydration. It can't be anything. If you see it in 15 seconds, it's not like it can't be video editing or anything.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not good. It's not good that your brain defaults past logic. Now, here's the thing. Do I believe in the spiritual? I do believe in the spiritual. Do I believe that there are things that are unexplained that we have to just attribute to spirituality? Yes. But do I believe that anything that I don't understand, I should initially default to not using my logic using spiritual tropes? And what it does is it really, in my opinion, it's like the boy who cried wolf. Mm-hmm. That's like you cry about these things. Everything is a demon. Everything is a spiritual experience. So when there's actually a spiritual experience, nobody's going to believe you. Mm. Like, they're never going to believe you. And you're just going to be a weirdo. You know what I'm saying? So I mean,
Lana is a professing Christian. She goes to Judah Smith's church. We know this for a fact because she recorded his sermon one Wednesday night and put it on her album.
Yeah.
Four and a half minute interlude.
So I've been to enough Benny Hinn crusades to know that a group of people falling down all at once may not be witchcraft.
It could be the Holy Spirit. We don't know.
Maybe the Holy Spirit or dehydration.
But Derek, to your point, I do think the internet has created like a crowd of people that you could do the opposite of Occam's razor. Like Occam's razor is the old, like, you know, in journalism school, you always learn the always start with the most simple solution, and it's probably that.
Exactly.
Right? Like, default to what is the most rational, simplest solution, and then start disproving from there. Let's take the most insane idea ever, that she's an actual warlock who has superpowers that no one else has, and that she randomly unleashes them at concerts in Mexico sometimes. It just doesn't to me if she's Gandalf and people in the front row, you know, like, you know,
bro, if I can do that, I'm gonna be an assassin. You'll make a whole lot more money.
Or you'll be Benny Hinn. One or the other. Benny Hinn's the other option.
Well,
you're an assassin or you're an evangelist.
I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
Just to put this out there, Lana did clarify that she's not a witch because she did respond to the comment, which the comments have been turned off.
She responded to the Christian influencer.
She did post on the video. I'm going to slightly censor it for little ears. She said, "Bleep, I know the Bible verse for verse better than you do, so you're giving off super gremlin energy, not in a good way." I don't really know how you can give off gremlin energy.
You know who knows about gremlins?
And trust me, from someone who knows gremlin energy, this is gremlin energy.
All right. What else you got?
Okay.
I'd love to get her on AirPod and really, really. I just got to find her travel schedule and
decide a lot.
Hopefully, just buy a bunch of seats and we'll see.
Maybe she's flying Spirit. Get it.
Anyway. Oh, no.
Thank you, Derek, for giving me that pity laugh.
I got you. Good.
I do believe
I'm laugh at everything because
I do believe witches and warlocks run Spirit Airlines. I do believe that. That is true.
The evil forces, certainly.
The evil forces definitely run Spirit Airlines.
Oh, I know who's not buying AirPod. Thanks a lot, Cameron. Now they're no.
That sponsorship, gone.
Might as well just call it Dark Spirit Airlines. Yeah.
It's over.
All right. What else do you have?
All right. Well, you know, it's October, it's Halloween, start of fall, but apparently it's also the month of Nate Bargatze. Last week we talked about
Bargatze. He on the Tonight Show to Jimmy Fallon's face, as Jimmy Fallon, who's a big fan of Nate's, was calling him Nate Bargatze. Nate goes, "You know, my family calls it Bargatze. Now, my family may be wrong. You know, you can call me Bargatze. It's fine. But just, my name's actually Nate Bargatze." And it was, he did this like after Jimmy was talking about like, "Oh, we're such good friends now. We've been spending so much time together." And Nate's like, "Yeah, but you've always said my name wrong, buddy." So it's Bargatze.
Okay,
so,
that's amazing.
Right, this is, it was like Lidgertwood all over again for me.
Well, we'll get to that. Yeah. I mean,
okay.
Listeners, you know, I said Brooke Lidgertwood's coming up. You're probably like, "Who's Brooke Lidgertwood?" Because for 10 years, you have been telling us about Brooke Ligertwood. We found out. I have been saying her name wrong.
I feel like at some point
I feel
you go
so
with it.
Bad. I've spent so much time with her. She's amazing.
I did apologize for always saying her name wrong because I finally said it right because her team was very nice and sent over like the pronunciation of it.
Phonetic.
And she was like, "Oh, everyone says it wrong." Like, she was, I feel like she got more excited that someone actually said it right for the first time. So.
You know, when I found out it was about you and I have kind of wrestled with and talked about the pronunciation of her name. I mean, we're not fully confident that it was
you didn't
like
want to just
you know
call her.
Too much.
It's like the Fallon Barry. I've known her for 15 years. I don't. Yeah. Oh, by the way, what is your name? You know what I mean? Like, I can't do that. So anyway, Emily and I have talked about it. Dude, I saw her post a video on Instagram, and she was like, and then just go and pre-order my album and put in promo code Brooke Litterwood. And I was like, oh, I sent the video to Emily. I'm like, we have confirmation of how to say her name, because she actually said it.
Nah, Cameron, why didn't you just call her, bro?
Dude, yeah. Stubbornness, man. Embarrassment. Yeah, I don't know.
It's like when you have a neighbor, there's a window of time that goes by after you talk to that neighbor. And then you've forgotten the name. Now you still talk to them. You still have quick driveway convos. But the point of no return for asking directly for their name has passed. You better hope a piece of mail
falls out.
What's
the window?
I think you got to give last names an exception, though.
Last name's
an exception. That's what I'm saying.
Dude, when I first moved into this neighborhood, I met several neighbors. They wanted to come over and see who took over that house. And you get their names. And like you said, I made the mistake of not writing them down on my phone. And now they know my name because they only had to learn one new name. I had to learn 15 and I didn't remember anybody's. And I'm telling you, I've lived here for 5 years now. I was walking my dog a couple months ago and a neighbor that I see all the time was walking his dog and he said, hey, Cameron, hey. He goes, and he just looks at me stone dead in the eyes and he goes, what's my name? And I'm like, I'm so sorry.
Were you like, good one, Chief?
Oh, you.
He goes, it's Peter, Cameron. My name's Peter. And I was like, at the second he was out of sight, I was like, writing it down on my phone. I was like, dude, at the end of the road, and that's Peter. You know, oh, man, I felt so bad.
I ain't going to even lie. I'm terrible with names, y'all. Just forgive me, bro. Like, everybody that knows me, just know more than likely if I'm calling you, bro, it's a 50-50 chance that I don't have no clue what your name is.
I had someone forget.
So I'm letting it be known right now.
I had someone forget my name once, and they were trying to play it off like they knew my name.
It was the third date. It was the third date, and he'd forgotten your name.
No. Oh, no. They were trying to play it off like they knew my name. They just didn't know how to spell it because they asked me, like, hey, how do you spell your name again? And I was like, Emily Brown, the incredibly normal way to spell Emily Brown. And I was like, you just forgot my name. Like, it's a good trick to work if your name is not the most basic name on this planet.
Yeah, it's like, you gotta be illiterate.
Yeah. But
tell me.
I felt bad because I was like, they didn't want to just directly ask me. They would just directly say that they forgot my name. But it was like, You thought you were being clever.
You ain't
want to
throw him a bone, Emily. You ain't want to throw him a bone. You just was like, not today.
Not today. I was feeling sassy that day.
So tell me how I'm supposed to get my neighbors' names, because my neighborhood is a mid-century houses and stuff, and we have the slots on the door for the mail. So we don't have mailboxes.
This one's easy.
I can't go steal mail. I can't look in the mailbox.
You have to have someone with you. You could have Cohen or a friend over.
Oh, it's like, my son Cohen.
Hey, this is, right. And then let them get the introduction. You know, I've done that move at
you use your kids dinner. Often for that.
But if I'm at,
they know Cohen too at this point. They're like, hey, Cohen, hey, Karen. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
if I'm at like a professional party type of situation, it's like, I got to remember that guy. Dana, come over here. Hey, I'd like you to meet my wife, Dana. You know what I mean? And she knows what's happening.
So you're saying I need to get married or a girlfriend to be able to learn my neighbor's names.
I think that should probably be your chief motivation from here. That's the only path to non-awkwardly.
Not loneliness and, you know. Yeah,
I mean, that's beneficial. But it could also help with Peter's friends.
I like it. All right. I'm sorry. What was the update, Emily?
Nate Bargatze. Last week we talked about his new production company he's starting, but just this week it was announced he's going to be hosting the Halloween episode of SNL, which is crazy.
That's awesome.
That's crazy.
So
good for him.
Good for him.
It's the October 28th
episode. Jesse, I know we've told this story a million times. I'm not going to rehash it, but I still, back of my mind, I need to take credit for his success. You know, like that we found him at South by Southwest and platformed him outside of his little.
He told us that after that interview, he got asked about it all the time. So I think he owes us his success.
5%. We just want 5%.
I was going to say 90, but we'll take 5. We'll take 5.
He writes the jokes.
If we can just get a mention in the SNL monologue.
A lot of people write jokes.
That'd be cool.
You know? Yeah, I think it's...
Y'all got to work on y'all splits.
I wonder if Nate wants a part of this AirPod for his new family-friendly network. I'm shopping this around to everyone, you know?
I love it, AirPod. So he's doing SNL. We mentioned a week ago, he's launching a new production company, Nateland, and he's doing shows and TV and a ton of stuff, man. I'm so happy for him. He couldn't happen to a better dude.
It's really interesting, too. After he posted about it on Instagram, I feel like I'm probably the only one that does this. I went to go look at the comments to see what other celebrities just like were excited for him, because I'm curious like who's is a fan of him. And I was pleasantly surprised. He has just kind of a wide range of people who are also fans of him. Like Adam Devine, who plays Kelvin on The Righteous Gemstones. Mariska Hargitay, she's Olivia Benson on Law & Order SVU. Jimmy Fallon, of course. Like it's a very interesting range of people.
Yeah, it was really cool seeing. My favorite was seeing on, you know, the post where Nate was saying, hey, by the way, I'm doing SNL. He's on a national arena tour right now. Mm-hmm. He's selling out arenas everywhere. And he had to cancel half a dozen dates to do SNL. And so he was saying, I'm so sorry on the video. You know, Dustin Nickerson, who's another Christian comedian that we love, he commented and he said, yeah, Nate, I was opening for you on several of those dates that just got canceled, and I've never been happier to lose thousands of dollars. So good, congrats, buddy. Look at that. So, I thought that was really cool.
And he's like, also, you owe me several thousand dollars.
Yeah. Also, there's a kill fee, and I needed that money for my kids' tuition. So, yeah.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see him on SNL because I've never seen him act before. Like, I've only ever seen him do stand up. So I'm curious to see.
If you ever watched clips from his podcast and stuff, he's very soft-spoken and slow-moving kind of in how he banters with people. It's an interesting dynamic because the Nate on stage commands the stage. He's got a really good stage presence. It's still relatable. You feel like you're hanging out with a friend. But when he's in this ensemble podcast setup, he's not like the big personality that it revolves around. It'll be interesting to see him in an ensemble cast improv dynamic to see how he kind of his monologue will be fantastic
for sure.
You know that, but it'll be funny to see. My guess is probably a lot of cameos, like Tom Hanks showing up to do
David S. Pumpkins.
Yeah. And you know, yeah, things like sure. that. I bet we'll come back.
I'm trying to think who Nate looks like to see who he could do impressions of, like if there's anyone that he would be impersonating. I can't
they're gonna do a bunch of, like, you know, guys at the office or you know, guys at the bar. You know, they're gonna do a lot of everyman type skits, I bet. But anyway. All right. What's the last thing?
Last thing is The Chosen. They're doing something really interesting for its upcoming fourth season. Every single episode is going to premiere in theaters before going to streaming. So starting in February, fans can watch like 2 to 3 new episodes each week in a theater. And then eventually it'll be on a million streaming platforms and,
after the fact.
Yeah. But I've just never seen a TV series premiere their whole season in a theater.
Oh, they know them Christians about to pull up, boy.
No, I know. They'll rent them out.
They know Christians about to pull up.
I mean, they
drop them on a Wednesday too.
They did a couple of Chosen theater events in the past, and they did really well.
Yeah, they did like the season premiere and the season finale of the last season. Yeah.
But every episode is crazy. Emily was telling me this, and it got me thinking about the movie theater industry. Even what's happening literally right now with the Taylor Swift concert movies. You know, it's selling out theaters. It made $100 million the opening weekend, but it's only airing on the weekends. It's only being in the theaters on the weekends because she said, a lot of my fans are in school, and I don't want them to sit there on a school night watching a 3-hour concert, and they need to do their homework. So she said in her negotiation to release this to AMC, I'll only do it if you agree to do it on my release schedule. And they said, yeah, you know, now they're missing or losing tens of millions of dollars having those other days not showing it, but they agreed. And I'm wondering if this and what The Chosen is doing is kind of, think about the box office since COVID. It's just been a lot of duds. Hollywood, as usual, has just not... I mean, there's been a few movies that have done very, very well, obviously. But but in general, that old approach to going to the theater and watching movies is just over because I'll just wait and watch it on Max or something. And so it's interesting to me now that theaters are maybe leaning into content that they didn't in the past.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if this is going to set an example for like other shows. Think about back in the day. What if the Breaking Bad finale was exclusive in theaters first?
Oh, that would be crazy.
I would have been in line buying a ticket.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Been there for sure.
So I bet this will be a thing where like TV is going to start and theaters will embrace it because this is revenue.
Yeah.
Found revenue that they didn't have otherwise. And then concert videos or concert. You know, I'm just wondering if there's going to be other experiences. Obviously, those Fathom event things been happening for years, but this feels different. Like maybe television, music, and Hollywood movies are going to be theater experiences now, you know?
Well, I mean, there's theaters near, I don't know if it's like this in other cities as well, but that are doing like NFL games on Sunday afternoon. You can go and like, you know, for...
That would be amazing to watch a game on.
Well, especially like the cinema cafe types that where you can buy food and drinks and everything, where they'll have like, all right, we're going to, at the 1 o'clock, we're going to play a Steelers game. At 4 o'clock, we're going to do this. It's just a different way to experience football outside of like your house or a sports bar. You
That's
know?
Actually player because the thing, when you think about it with a movie, movies are, you know, you could watch them at the theater or at home. It's all good, you know. But being able to watch the big game with, you know, with that's crazy.
It's almost like you're there in the crowd. You know,
I don't care what kind of house you got. You ain't got a movie theater unless you balling. But the average everyman doesn't have, they're not able to see people on that level. So that's, this is,
man,
the world is changing. It's cool.
Yeah. I know. I'm here for it. Like, all right. All right. Well, that'll do it for
Relevant Buzz.
Make sure to check out relevantmagazine.com every weekday, where we're covering more stuff like that, covering the intersection of faith, culture, and everything in between. Thanks, Emily. All right, stay tuned. Up next, Brooke Lidgerwood joins
Who?
Us.
Who? Oh, gotcha.
You're listening to Pink Panther's song is Mosquito. Well, today's episode is brought to you in part by Sanctuary Mental Health Ministries. Mental health and faith are big topics to cover, even more so when you're talking with teenagers. The Sanctuary Youth Series helps youth leaders, pastors, teachers, and parents break it down, covering topics like a theology of mental health, emotions, stigma, recovery, friendship, self-care, and more. The Sanctuary Youth Series is an 8-week resource designed for 11 to 15-year-olds. Help the next generation experience the church as a supportive space for mental health. Run the Sanctuary Youth Series today at sanctuarymentalhealth.org/relevant. Again, that's sanctuarymentalhealth.org/relevant. Are you a recent college grad or about to graduate from college and have no idea what's next? Check out the Global Ambassador Program, or GAP, with ELIC. GAP is a professional development program that will help you gain the tools you need for a lifetime of impact. Be immersed in the cultures of Thailand, Tunisia, or Uzbekistan for 9 months as you take language classes, grow in your faith, and serve the local community alongside a team of other Christian young professionals. And get this, ELIC recently opened applications for 2026. You could be on a plane next summer, impacting lives and reaching your fullest potential. To learn more about GAP and take the next step, go to elic.org/relevant. That's elic.org/relevant. Well, our guest today is Brooke Lidgerwood. She's one of our favorite worship artists who's helped create songs like What a Beautiful Name and Who You Say I Am. She's releasing her new solo album, 8, today. I hope it's her 8th album. That'd be weird. So we caught up with her to talk about the story behind the album and how she's still processing major life changes and how her solo career as Brooke Lidgerwood compares to her former solo career as Brooke Frazier. Here's our conversation with Brooke Lidgerwood.
We're here today to talk about your new solo album, 8, which is coming out. I'm curious, is there a message or theme that ties this album together?
I think I don't know if there's one theme. I feel like when it comes to kind of putting together songs for an album, I mean, Seven was different because that was a project that came like in completion, like one song after another, and just blew my mind. That's still a complete miracle to me, that whole thing. But when it came to Eight and kind of choosing the songs that would be on this project, I kind of approached it like I would, like a worship song list, and but like, or a worship night, because it's longer than a song list. But you know, wanting to kind of have a diversity of theme, you know, making sure that I'm not necessarily repeating themes. So having a diversity of lyric, a diversity of kind of style or mood or texture. So really, there's definitely a few things I always want to make sure are included on an album, which are moments kind of for declaration, moments for celebration, moments for reflection, and moments for intercession. I think kind of, and those can all sound completely different, but I think we've kind of got that on this album. So there's songs about the Christ coming. There's a song about Calvary. There's a song about, you know, celebrating, like blessing God through every circumstance. There's all of these different things. So I would say that, there's not one theme other than what I wanted to do was deliberately try and have a diversity of kind of biblical and scriptural theme in there, because there is more to know of the Lord than we could ever write in millions of songs. And so here's 10 that can be like a teeny, 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 tiny drop in a massive ocean. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember talking with you when you were putting out Seven, and that was like such a, seemed almost like a surprise album for you. Like you weren't really planning on it. So how does writing Eight, or how does creating Eight, how did that compare to like creating Seven?
Super different. And I'm always so aware of, like, one of the things that really frightens me about, like when I was kind of fully immersed in kind of my mainstream lane, like Brooke Fraser, one of the things that I was always like hesitant about, and a part of that was also immaturity that I didn't understand. Part of it was also pride that I thought that I knew things that I didn't know, like just being an idiot. But like, just one thing that always concerned me about, I guess, doing a lot of talking about, and particularly when it comes to like kind of Christian or ministry spaces, it's that sometimes it's so easy for us to use spiritual language just to load God's name on stuff. And I'm just always so aware of, I don't want to do that. I don't want to just use all these like kind of fluffy Christian words. And I give that kind of context for like when I was making Seven and then talking about it, I was just so aware of like, gosh, this just like sounds like I'm saying things. But it really was true in that, like, I really did not ever expect or desire to put out a project of songs of worship for the church with my name on it. In many ways, it was my worst nightmare. But when the Lord asks you to do something, he prepares you for it, he softens your heart, he changes things. And then in the case of Seven, he spoke very clearly and very quickly, and I knew it was very time sensitive. And it was only, and so I said, of course, my husband and I were like, okay, yes, Lord, we hear you, we see you, yes. But we didn't necessarily understand, because I'm very happy, have always been happy, particularly, of course, when it comes to worship in the church, being part of a team. Like, that is my happiest spot, like being part of a team. And then it wasn't until after Seven came out and some really devastating things began to unfold in my church community, that I was like, and I'm not saying this definitely wasn't the whole reason why, but I began to maybe understand why the Lord had started to lead us this way, which was, so I said in my Instagram stories the other day, like, it's a thought that leaves me so grateful for the shepherding of God, but also really sad. Like, I wish that it, this is not the dream, you know? I love being part of a team. And so for that reason, 8 brings with it like a lot of my own grief, but an equal amount of surrender and gratitude. And so it has been a really beautiful process and a redemptive process. And I think a really healthy process, like all my, like all of the relationships are so good. But yeah, just, yeah, it's been a lot.
Too much for the souls of men, but somehow you hold it all upon the cross. Calvary's enough. Calvary's enough. When I know nothing, when I know too much, what I choose to know.
When you started your career, you were Brooke Brazier, and now you're Brooke Ligertwood, which I do want to apologize because I think I've never said your name right until this moment.
You just nailed it. That was fantastic. And honestly, I never take offense because it's a crazy name. It's a crazy name. I get people get all the points just for trying, you know.
Well, I do want to give a shout out to your team because they put like a pronunciation when they sent over.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And I was like, and I really thought back. I was like, yeah, I've never said it that way.
So fine.
But I just want to, you know, like, you know, you've had a solo career before, you worked with the team, and now you're solo again. How does like Brooke Brazier's career compare to Brooke Ligertwood?
Great question. It's I guess it's like very different and also in some ways very similar. So I guess the fun thing is that kind of Brooke Fraser, I think this is still a secret. Maybe it's not. It won't be a secret for much longer. But I'm actually going to do some more Brooke Fraser things next year, which is like a little bit crazy, so but fun, but really fun things. And so that's still going. So I'm still with kind of my whole Brooke Fraser team of, and now we've been working together for like 20 years, which is pretty fun. So when you have relationships that are that kind of deep in, there's just such a comfort to that. Like there's a knowing, you know each other, you trust each other. And then kind of my team who I have the great honor of working with now are just like absolutely fire. And the way that the Lord has kind of assembled us all together, particularly one of my senior team member, a guy called Dom, we've been friends for many, many years, just through ministry. So it's just, honestly, I just get to kind of do this with my friends, which is the best part. And it's similar in that there's just, there's a lot of love, there's a lot of trust, obviously kind of very different things, but it's pretty cool. And I appreciate now that kind of what I can bring to, I guess, getting to offer songs of worship to the church as myself. I don't know, I've always been myself, but you know what I mean. There's just a lot of things that I learned a lot. I've made a lot of mistakes. Hopefully I learned from those mistakes, and there's just a calm that comes as well. Cause I'm also not trying to build anything. Like I'm not trying to build Brooke Ligertwood. I'm not trying to build like a touring thing or anything. Cause at this point it's just obedience. It's just like, Lord, what do you want? And if he says 8's it, then that's fine. Like whatever, I'll go and keep baking or whatever. We'll just keep reading. I'll become a full-time reader. I'll become a librarian. I'll do something else. But I've always said, like, I don't mind what I do for the Lord. I'll do whatever he wants. I'm not, I wrote a song about it a few years ago called New Wine. Like, I don't want to cling to my idea of how I think God will use me. I want him to use me, however he wants to. And that's ultimately also the place where I'll find the most fulfillment and satisfaction is when I'm right in the center of his will. So rather than me trying to tell him what his will for me is, like just actually it's being a person of inquiry. I love that about David in the Bible. Like he made a ton of stuff ups and was not a perfect man, but he had a heart after God. And I think that one of the beautiful ways we can see that about throughout his life is that he never stopped inquiring of the Lord. And I just made that decision a long time ago, and it's something that I'm committed to. I never want to assume what the Lord wants. I want to always ask him, what do you think about this, Lord? What do you want? And he's usually pretty good at putting up a giant red flag or a wall or a green light or opening a door or a window. And he's just really faithful in the way that he leads us. So, life with Jesus, crazy fun.
That was Brooke Lidgerwood. Make sure to check out her fifth album, 8. No, I don't know. I was just kidding. Her album's called 8. I'm assuming it's her 8th album. It's out now. It's out today. All right, stay tuned up next. It's your feedback. Listening to Oliver Tree. The song is With You. What if you could change a child's life with just $10? Right now, thousands of vulnerable children in East Africa are suffering from jiggers. It's a painful, preventable parasite that burrows into their feet. Soul Hope is the only organization treating it through foot washing, medical care, and durable closed-toed shoes that protect kids long after treatment. $10 may not seem like much in today's world, but when we come together, those small gifts add up to big change. Join the 10 for 10 campaign. $10 protects 10 small toes. Visit soulhope.org/10 to give now. One small gift makes a big difference. Again, that's soulhope, soulehope.org/TEN. Today's show is brought to you in part by the new documentary, Buying Her. Why is sex trafficking a multi-billion dollar industry? Sex buyers. To end trafficking, we need to put them in the spotlight. The documentary Buying Her, created by the organization Exodus Cry, is a first-of-its-kind film exposing the truth about sex buyers. It captures the unfiltered stories of men revealing how they became predatory consumers and the booming sex trade, and how some of them found redemption. Buying Her strikes at the very heart of sex trafficking, and it's available to watch now for free at buyingher.com. Little point of correction, little editor's note. Emily informed us during the break that that was 8 is Brooke Lidgerwood's second solo album. So nowhere close to 8.
It's girl math. I think that's what it is.
Girl math. I like it.
All right.
We'll take it.
It's time for your feedback. Last week, we got talking about like growing up in the church. Marty and Derek and me and Jesse and Emily too. Your church experience was as weird. It sounded way more boring than ours. But we grew up. You know what?
I mean,
we went to Pentecostal churches. You went
you
to a Baptist
don't have
church.
To say I mean, it like that.
Ours was more entertaining, if nothing else. How's that?
Hey, y'all churches was dry. That's what we used to say. That the Baptist churches is dry. We not gonna dry church. Our church ain't no telling what was gonna happen.
Wait.
Yeah, that's real talk. When you get the more non you get in the non-denominational, the more of a wild card every Sunday is.
It's the more room you leave for the spirit opens up doors for the foolish.
I did think of y'all the other day because I went home to my parents and they still go. I think they technically go to a Bible church. It's a Baptist church, same thing. And I was dying because I was watching my phone and it was getting close to noon and the pastor was still going. It was like 11:55. And I was like, oh, no way we're getting out at noon. That's fine. I don't care. I go to a church, but we don't do that. At 11:58, this pastor goes, well, I have 2 more points to make, but I have to wrap it up now. And he just cut it short and like prayed right there. And I was like, oh, it hit me. I was like, oh, I am in a Baptist church. Like we have to be out by noon. Like that's when... church is over. And we, I think maybe 12:02 we were out, but I was like,
hard stops, hard outs.
I've just never heard a pastor out where I'd be like, well, man, didn't get to it.
Charismatic churches, let the Spirit move, man. Yeah, I got those, like, 2 more points and then the Holy Spirit's going to give me 6 more.
Open.
And then we're, we're going to go when the Holy Spirit's done. You know what I'm saying? We're not getting out of 12.
Shocking.
Anyway, so we were talking about our experiences growing up, church quirks, and we she put a note. Emily put a note in the rundown right here. So she gave us the feedback document, and she said, here's what the question of the week was. And then she wrote...
I wanted to give context in case we forgot.
For me to remember where we, how we got to that question, right? And here's her note. We spent an insanely long amount of time talking about things our churches used to do that we look back on as silly or funny. An insanely long time... Emily,
I remember it being close to half an
hour. We let
the
Holy Spirit move. We let that conversation go until the Holy Spirit was done.
You can take the girl out of the Baptist church. You can't take the Baptist church
out of the
girl.
This ain't no Baptist podcast. This is a non-denominational Pentecostal podcast.
So you guys hit us up, and here's a few of our favorite replies.
First off, these are dark. I'm gonna tell you Marcus Looney. So he says, there's nothing like a 90s black church men's day. One Sunday... all 7 husbands would march and two-step their way from the entrance of the church to the pulpit, where they would either sing a selection of their choice or it would awkwardly end and everyone would take their seats.
Wait, 90s black church had men's day?
Yeah, we had the men's day for sure.
Did you have women's day too?
Yeah, you had men's day, you had women's day, you would have the day where the youth would leave service. Yeah. We went through a season of that. It didn't really work out for long, but yeah, we would do that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, we had definitely men's
day. Was it like Father's Day?
No, it's like men's day. It's where the men are in... like the men are like, they're doing everything. Like, you know, the men's choir is singing, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, there's no women in the choir. So it's all the men are singing. And usually the songs are like, you know, just different. Yeah.
Very baritone.
Yeah. Very baritone-ish. Yeah. So that really, for me, was the biggest thing that would distinguish it. It's just the choirs would change out. So, you know, you have the same pastor or whatever, but the youth, on youth day, Sunday, you had a youth choir come in. We'd come sing a couple songs and then, you know, go back and do what we're going to do. I don't know if that was at every black church. Like, this thing about the people two-stepping and stuff, we never did that. But that might have just been Marcus's church.
It, but,
you know what I'm saying? It sounded like somebody was pledging the black fraternity. Like,
yeah, I know, right? It was
like Kappa or something.
You seen those lines, the Kappa, the old man just doing the...
Yeah,
I watched those on loop.
He might have got mixed up with like church and then like when he was pledging. But, you know, we don't know.
Anna grew up in a house church. She had a couple quirks, but I like this one. They were accepting of many theologies, so they always had 2 types of communion. One with unleavened communion bread, the other with regular homemade white bread. The benefit of that is they got to eat that after the church was over, because homemade white bread is really, really good. You know, it's like if someone brings Martin potato rolls in, you know, they're getting eaten at some point.
Yeah. Okay. So Adam Davis said, back in the late 90s and early 2000s, it seemed pretty common for a church to bust out "I Believe I Can Fly" by R. Kelly. And again, since I was an infant, I need y'all to confirm, is that actually a thing that happened? And also, was that a Christian song? I'm trying to remember it, and I don't...
No, it was
his inspirational song. For
sure. Okay.
Yeah. It was from the film.
I remember I went to a church in the early 2000s. It was predominantly black, and there was one service where they were honoring a couple of the remaining members of the Tuskegee Airmen. And so they were on the front row, and we went to, you know, honor them, bring them up and let them share for a minute. And when they were coming up, they played "I Believe I Can Fly." And then when the service ended, that's the song that was playing as you left the sanctuary, was "I Believe I Can Fly." And I had the same thought that Adam did. This ain't a Christian song, and that man is not a Christian. Like, we knew about R. Kelly.
Okay, that's what I wanted to ask you, because he goes on to say, like, you know, "I liked Space Jam as much as any millennial, but should we really be playing music from a habitual predator in a house of worship?" I didn't really know much about R. Kelly until the last couple of years when his trial happened. Was it like a known thing?
No, there was tapes leaking.
There
and
was
stuff.
Like
we knew.
A Chappelle sketch you know, dating back a decade and a half, probably. It was like an open secret.
No, Chappelle was like 03, 04.
Not during I Believe I Could Fly, though. That wasn't out with.
No, that was, that was late 90s.
So this is a couple years after that.
During Space Jam, like, honestly, Space Jam, Dark Knight, R. Kelly, you didn't start getting that until you got 2002. Like, that's right. Internet started exposing people. Yeah, so, I mean, you're talking 03, 02, 04, or like, you know, 2003, 2004. That's when all the stuff about R. Kelly started coming out, and you started hearing less Space Jam in the church.
And, like, the tapes started leaking, the videos and stuff, and so
I think this guy's looking in retrospect, but he's not in context, in the sense that during that time, he was just R. Kelly. You know, but he still was sexually explicit in his lyrics, you know?
Right.
But it wasn't like, let me put my key in your ignition explicit. Like, it wasn't, like, crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes, it was. I mean, this song, dude.
Yeah, it was. Anyhow, this is another thing, too. Just letting y'all know. I don't know about what it is how everywhere else, but y'all know this as far as church is concerned. If a person does something positive and it reaches a high level, everybody's adopting it, Christian or non-Christian.
It'll be celebrated.
They're going to celebrate it. But I know in a black church, we just be happy that somebody ain't out doing nothing wrong. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, oh, he did something positive. Let's celebrate that. You know, it's almost like R. Kelly, for me growing up, was like our ghetto little cousin that came to church on Sunday. We going to give him a chance to, you know, tell his little truth. You know what I mean? But after a while with R. Kelly, it was like, all right, bro, we got to, I don't know what, we can't do nothing with this, man. You tripping, bro.
I remember I saw a video last week going around of early days of D'Angelo performing in church, playing the piano, and they prayed over him. They're like, Michael, I guess his name's Michael. Michael just got a record deal, and he's going to be out there singing R&B music, and we just want to pray God's anointing on him. Da, da, da. Wow. And he was in his suit, and he was singing worship at the piano, gospel stuff. And I was like, D'Angelo's music wasn't church friendly.
Man, but, look, you can't name many R&B artists in the early 90s and 2000s that didn't start in church.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like you're just not gonna name them. I mean, and I wouldn't even say that. I mean, go all the way back to Motown. Like, those guys were starting in church. The you know what I'm saying?
Aretha,
everybody. They started in church. So it's unique. You know, you're like, man, I wish they were still using their gift, but that's still our little nephews and nieces. We just happy that they doing good, baby. We wish they changed them lyrics, but baby, we just so happy that you doing good. Come on back home to church every now and again when you get a chance. Right. If that's how it is, it's like that. You know what I'm saying?
All right. Well, there's more where that came from. Go check it out. You guys had a lot of church quirks growing up, too. Good to know we're not alone. All right. It's time for this week's
editorial question of the week.
All right. Well, normally we like to connect the question of the week to something that happened on the show, but not this week because it's the month of Nate Bargatze, otherwise known as Halloween spooky season. So we got Halloween coming up, and every year we do like an article listicle on the website of kind of like cheap, funny, timely pop culture-y costume ideas or funny ideas of costumes. This show is coming out, if you listen to it when we released it, it's coming out on October 20th, which means we will be reading these replies on October 27th. So what we want from you is your funny, creative, topical, timely, DIY, whatever it is, Halloween costume ideas, whether it's couples, individual, hit us up and we're going to read the most creative replies on next week's show.
These Christians ain't finna turn no costumes in. They too Christian for that.
No, that's not true. I remember, man, one year, never underestimate the creativity of broke college kids, man. Because like, there was one year, one guy was like, either I went to Dollar Tree and got a big bag of purple balloons, blew them up, taped them all over my body, and went as a bunch of grapes.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's brilliant. He did his whole costume for $1.
One year I had to have two Halloween costumes for college because it was like, I think we had a college party and there was also like the fall fest and I wanted them to be different. And I used the same shirt for both of them in just like different ways because I was like, I can barely afford one costume. I got to be able to use this for two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There you go.
College students figure it out.
That's what I'm saying. So that's what we want. We want your funny, innovative DIY costume ideas.
And it's
got to
be more
so
than just Barbenheimer stuff, okay? Like, we want some deep pop culture cuts.
I'm expecting a lot of Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce this year.
Well, that, how about, do we put the kibosh? No Barbie, no Taylor Swift.
But there has to be a twist on it.
Yeah.
If you're doing it, you know, next level it. Yeah,
next level it. There. Cool. All right, hit us up on Twitter/X at Relevant Podcast or at Relevant everywhere else, and we'll read our favorites on next week's show. Well, before we wrap things up, we want to thank Brooke Lidgertwood for joining us today. Make sure to grab her brand new second solo album, 8, out today. Look at that timing. And there's a lot more of that conversation to come, dear listener. Don't fret. We'll bring it to you in some very interesting ways. But yeah, there's more to come with Brooke. Also, make sure to check out relevantmagazine.com every weekday, where we're covering the intersection of faith, culture, and everything in between. Make sure to follow us on all the socials to get the latest. And if you just want the best of the best content, head over to the website and sign up for our daily newsletter. We send you our top 5 trending stories right to your inbox every weekday morning. Oh, also, make sure to check out Relevant Plus. It's the best way to experience our content. You get this podcast ad-free, as well as ad-free unlimited reading at the website, enhanced digital magazine, exclusive podcasts, and more. Plans start as low as $250 a month, and we'd love the support. I think you'll like it. Okay, on that note, we'll wrap things up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Derek Miner.
I'm Emily Brown.
We'll see you guys on Tuesday. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.
For listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
Can you say one nice thing about me?
Relevant Podcast Network.
Saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save.